$8 a week of that. For child support, I don't know.
How many times have you been arrested on this charge?
4 times.
And how many days have you spent in jail?
3 each time, so 12 days. Plus I did 5 days, because when it converted back to a fine, he gave me 5 days and the fine. So I did 5 days at the county farm. So 17 days so far, and I've paid $1,900.
Who were you, whose court were you in today?
Mr. Joseph's again.
And what did he say?
He just continued it for another 45 days to let me get a license in. And then he says he'll dismiss everything.
Has he said that before?
Yes.
Has he done that?
No.
Why not?
Because he can. Because these courts are jury-rigged, I mean...
Do you think that he intends to dismiss your case, or is he simply...
Actually, this time, I think I believed him. He was very polite. He said that I have truly been trying to correct this, although it's not my, correction, He said, my lawyer says he will. Okay?
We've been talking with James Ney. James, you also have been a man who's lost your house, what, 3 times, 4 times?
4 times, and just had my house robbed again by my landlord. Well, actually, his friends that he had living with him, dope addicts. They kicked in my door. They threw all my stuff out in the yard, stole all my things. And so I call the police as I come home, and they're in there ransacking the place. And guess who they send out as an officer? Good old Officer Coyne.
Officer Coyne is the one who, Deputy Coyne is the one who picked you up before?
Well, he's the one who hates my guts.
He's a sheriff's deputy.
Yeah, he's a sheriff's deputy. He hates my guts because I speak out about him being a pedophile and the things he does with little children up there. Also, he likes to go through the woods and find homeless camps and cut their tents. I've actually seen him personally cutting tents and sleeping bags up, destroying homeless.
You say he's a pedophile?
Because back when I had my pizza factory, every child in this valley was in my restaurant and is my friend. And although they won't speak out because the authorities don't do anything and they end up getting in trouble, they tell me about the number of young boys caught drunk that he has fondled and placed his mouth upon their private parts.
How many cases of this are you aware of?
5.
And you're not afraid to say so publicly?
I'm not afraid so. That's why Coyne hates me. That's why I've had so much trouble with Coyne.
So invite Deputy Coyne for a rejoinder up in the deputy.
Well, let's look at this. Why don't we invite him to ask him why he came to my house? A burglary was committed. He went into another house. He removed my TV set from that house, proving that there was a burglary committed. Left, said he would be back the next day at 2 o'clock, that these people were going to be arrested for burglary, that they committed a crime. And yet the next day, when this person attempted to assault me, I had to call the sheriff's department again. The sheriff's department showed up and had no knowledge of anything. In fact, they had to search. I had to stand there for 45 minutes while they searched to try to find some record of this happening. And all they found was a log by the dispatcher that someone was sent to the house. Because Officer Coyne, even though I have a case number, never filed a report. Never arrested anyone. Never did anything but go to the other participants and talk garbage about me.
So what's your next move, James?
At this point, file complaints against the officers. Maybe I should go down to the sheriff's department and ask why there's no investigation of the complaint.
Tape recorder or witness with you.
Yeah, I'd love you to come. I was going to ask you if sometime in the near future you had some free
time. Maybe later today if you're around.
Okay, I'm going to hang around.
Thank you, James.
You bet. Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, and we'll keep posted on the James Ney case and see what's cooking with that. Let's take a brief musical break here.
Listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. They've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. Every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they boost your copay.
War on the workers.
Don't you know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization.
War on the workers.
And cooperation. nation.
War on the workers.
When they call you a team.
War on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. They can lock us out, they can lock us up. We cannot give in. No more lies, no compromise. We'll battle till we win. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they talk flexibility,
war on the workers.
Every worker stiff can see.
War on the workers.
Now when they poison your water,
war on the workers.
Don't go like lambs to the slaughter.
War on the workers.
And when they foul up the air,
war on the workers.
You gotta show that you care.
War on the workers.
When they talk WTO,
war on the workers.
You best be screaming hell no.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war. It's a war on public education. It's a war on child labor protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Sisters and brothers, you know it's time right now. I said it's time we started calling the shots.
And that's Ann Feeney. Have you been to jail for justice? CD. I picked that up at the, I guess, at February rally up in San Francisco against the war. And that song's called War on the Workers. It's Still Free Radio, 96.3. Phone lines are open. You want to call in, 427-3772. We got an email from Reverend Wiley Drake. And actually, he was forwarding me an email about a subject which I'm not normally terribly involved in, but I wanted to kind of raise it just sort of in passing, because Wiley Drake is, as you may know, the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Buena Park, which is a suburb of Los Angeles. He's been on the air numerous times. He was arrested and convicted of housing homeless people in his church and still insists on doing that. The 200 or so homeless people, he is in essence the de facto homeless shelter of Buena Park and has earned the enmity of the police and politicians there for his courageous stand. Wiley is also a right-wing Republican who probably thinks Bush is too mild in other respects, and so we definitely don't agree on a number of issues. And so normally we kind of stick to the issues we agree on and just agree to disagree on the other issues, to support each other on the issues regarding homeless civil rights and the rights of people to help homeless people and so forth. But I wanted to tip my hat where it's necessary and point out, kind of bring this story to your attention. It's a Washington, D.C. story, May 1st. For the first time, the United States Supreme Court has allowed a prayer service as part of the National Day of Prayer to take place on its property. The 10-minute service was conducted by two ministers, one of whom had been previously arrested for kneeling to pray on the court steps, and the other who had been previously denied his request to hold a brief service on the court's main plaza. Reverend Rob Shank, an evangelical minister and president of the National Clergy Council, had petitioned the Marshal of the Supreme Court, Pamela Talkin, to allow a 10-minute service of prayer in the area of the court's property usually used for news conferences. Marshal Talkin denied his initial request. After Reverend Shank appealed her decision, the Marshal communicated to him in a letter, "So long as your activities are in conformity with these principles that govern the use of the court's property, they would be permitted." Reverend Pat Mahoney, a Presbyterian minister and head of the Christian Defense Coalition, who was arrested in 1998 for kneeling on the front steps of the court on the National Day of Prayer, received a letter from Marshal Talkin last week indicating that upon review such activity appeared to be lawful. Mr. Mahoney carried a copy of that letter to the steps of the court to today, apparently several days ago, the National Clergy Council had conducted a nationwide petition drive asking court officials to end its no-prayer zone policy. Reverend Shank believes that today's development may be in part a result of that drive. In this case, he went to the plaza of the court, prayed on the steps, sang hymns, knelt, said prayers for the nation, the very actions for which others have been threatened with arrest. This is an important victory, but it is not complete. There needs to be a clear, unambiguous, and objective standard that allows people to pray without fear of warning, expulsion, or arrest. That has yet to come, said Reverend Shank. And his website is www.faithandaction.org. I am an atheist myself, pretty much. Even more, I call myself an antitheist, one who believes that the idea of a God is a delusion and has created more misery in history than lots of other things. But I believe very, very firmly in the rights of people to practice their religion. And I believe that if it's public property and you want to pray, you should be able to pray. And that includes schools. And I think that's right. The only thing you can't do is organize prayers which in essence involve the government involvement, as, for example, it would in public schools. So I don't have a problem with people doing numerous extracurricular activities, as I call them, or activities of conscience, particularly that involves free speech. And looks like there's another point at which Wiley Drake and I agree. You're tuned to Free Radio, and I encourage you to give a call if you have any thoughts on any of this or any other subject, 427-3772. Coming up next, here's something that's kind of going to be a bit of an experiment here. About 6 months ago, actually 6 months ago to the day, as it happens, I was arrested on citizen complaint from council member Ed Porter. I was arrested in the city council, city manager's conference room. You might wonder, what was I doing? Standing on the table screaming, possibly ripping up city council documents, interrupting city council members who were trying to conduct a meeting. No, my crime, as those of you who have been following this case know, was tape recording a subcommittee meeting. This is a meeting that was Ed Porter, Emily Riley, and three members of the Downtown Commission called the Downtown Issues Working Group, which was supposedly working on the issue of reforming the gross downtown ordinance amendments that were passed that summer so that they could have some reasonable interaction with street musicians and street performers, because there was a draconian 14-foot nowhere on the sidewalk but except 5% that was due to come back to council in January. And they were, they passed a whole bunch of crazy ordinances last summer. They'd extended bad ordinances passed in 1994. We've talked about that before. Mainly cover ordinances for the police so they could run around and pick off the people they wanted, many of them poor and homeless, some of them young, some of them small drug dealers, what you will, some of them just people the merchants don't want down there, without having to be concerned with real charges. They can use bogus harassment charges and demand people move on, get going, get out of town, and so forth, or else get a $162 citation, and then the second citation up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine for such serious crimes as sitting within 14 feet of a building, which is now the law, on the sidewalk, even if you're not blocking anything, and even if you're disturbing no one. Setting up a table, a display device, they call it, within 14 feet. Now that's been reduced to 10 feet, but that still leaves 75% of the sidewalk or more unavailable on the downtown sidewalks, and probably virtually all sidewalks in the rest of the city unavailable. If you look closely at other sidewalks, like up in Soquel, you'll see that they're usually about 10 feet wide, so you get to put your sidewalk and your display device, your political table, on top of your car, perhaps. That might work. And it has to be said that police are not particularly vigilant about enforcing these laws in other places because they're so clearly unconstitutional. I set up a table in front of the Rio Theater when Emily Riley had her Sing for Peace, or Poets for Peace deal. That's up near the book loft, near, I could blink across from Hollywood Video or Blockbuster Video, whatever that huge video store is in the corner, up there at Seabright and Soquel. And I wasn't disturbed in any way, even though I announced quite publicly that here I am violating the law, come on and violate it with me. The First Amendment does not require essentially truckling to the prejudices and bigotry of the city council staff and the cowardice of the city council members who essentially are passing staff measures that have been put forward and rubber stamping them. That's what actually happened. The staff, in this case, being the police department, the redevelopment agency, who knows, and some other groups there. Not to mention special pressure from Candy Jackson of Jackson's Shoes and the rather right-wing downtown merchants who are demanding harsher laws against street performers and against homeless people. We didn't use the word homeless, of course. People engaging in bad behavior, even though there are plenty of laws dealing with bad behavior to use. If you really have real bad behavior, you just don't think that hanging out in front of your store is bad behavior that should be dealt with, and that apparently is now considered unacceptable behavior in Santa Cruz and until we reclaim the streets, which is what we need to do. So I was arrested by Porter at a council, at this committee meeting of the Downtown Issues Working Group, and nothing came of this. I was tape recording the first, and actually it was one more meeting of this group, but it was a group that was supposed to discuss a very important issue of how about these anti-homeless and anti-performer and anti-political activist laws that have been rammed through the city council last summer. They were rammed through, as I remind you, four council meetings in the course of 2 weeks. Unprecedented speed, with all the cries about sexual harassment and vandalism and drug abuse and violence, graffiti, you name it, shoplifting. None of these laws addressed any of these issues. And that being the case, nonetheless, they were rammed through as a sort of an election eve salute to the merchants, to show the merchants that they were on. City Council was on the merchants' side. Yak, yak, yak. It was a scandal, and in order to address some of the damage control was this. First, the Downtown Commission was the damage control committee that was supposed to go in and deal with it, and they found they couldn't. They threw up their hands, came back to City Council in September and said, we can't find exemption zones that would help, you know, ameliorate these problems because we can't agree on it, because it would simply, if you set up zones where people can engage in free speech, they're all going to cluster there and cause more problems for businesses than would otherwise be the case. Ditto with musicians. And anyway, sidewalks are free speech zones, thank you very much, provided you're not engaging in disturbing the peace. So the Downtown Commission didn't say all this, but it said some of this. And the City Council then put together another committee from three members of the Downtown Commission and three members of the City Council, two, and I guess the third wasn't present, Porter and Riley. And at that time, Riley wasn't mayor. Porter was the chair of the committee, and I had been recording. I'm going to play you this segment now. I'd been recording for about 10 minutes, and I hadn't been sort of secretly recording. I didn't have a tape recorder secreted in my jock strap or whatever. I had a tape recorder sitting on the table. Everybody knew I was recording, so did Porter, and it was all pretty open. We were all pretty straightforward. There were three members of the Downtown Commission, Porter, Riley, the assistant city manager, Martine Brunel, Sherry Connable, myself, and I think one other person. And this tape originally was very difficult to hear, so I gave it to a wizard who put it together a little better so that some of the voices are easier to hear. The downside is, in removing the hum, he added a kind of, it sounds a little bit like you're in a rock show in the background. There's sort of a warble, in the background. So you're not in a rock show. You are in the city manager's conference room, and that's what's cooking. This is on November 4th, 2002, and you're about to hear a reporter, me, arrested for refusing to leave a meeting and refusing to turn off my tape recorder in a public meeting. It's quite astonishing that this happened. Of course, nothing came of it because it would be an impossible charge to prosecute. I filed a claim on this issue day before yesterday, on Friday, and that is requesting damages and anticipates a potential lawsuit, if not in federal court or local court, municipal court, possibly a small claims court action against Ed Porter. Because Porter was acting outrageously here. He was abusing his authority. He was muzzling the public here. Not muzzling the public. He was putting his hands over the ears of the public. He was not letting what had happened get out. Now, it's not that there was so much of great significance that was happening, and I don't even know what happened because I had to leave that meeting. I was arrested. Two police officers took me out of that meeting. But here's the discussion that happened for those of you who are interested, and this is the first time I've played this on the radio, I believe. I don't think I was able to play this before, although I might have tried. Be patient, bear with it. It's a little hard to hear. It begins just a few moments before Ed Porter demands that I turn off the tape recorder, and I decline to do so. And we talk about the issue.
So we might want to get together on the 20th.
Emily Riley.
Have a presentation for.
Well, to have a brief conversation about, or maybe we could all just meet after the public meeting too, although we might be Friday. But just to get
in front of what you're doing.
Right. To get ready for the commission. Even though that's not much time, sometimes that's better because you're kind of on a roll and you might.
Of course, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, if we want them to bring something to council in December, they need to do more than just provide nothing. They need to ask for some sort of, well, I mean, maybe the direction might be to meet with us, figure out what we're going to, you know, I mean, my sense was that the Downtown Commission had given you guys sort of that take the ball and run with the directions. Something, I don't know what might come out of it, but it doesn't matter.
Is this be turned off, please? Why? It's a public meeting. Brown Act. No, two committees meeting from the Downtown Commission and from the City Council.
Okay, so bring your lawyer.
Hey,
I'm offered.
No. That's fine. You can do that. This was shown 2 years ago when Sugar held a joint meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board and the City Council. You have a full committee meeting.
I'll quote you to maintain the dignity and civility.
That's fine.
Those visitors are requested to conduct their business with respect for those who work here and for visitors. One of the items which I've underlined and highlighted, tape recording, conversations, or actions without permission. You do not have permission to tape record this informal meeting.
This is a public meeting.
Further, you have a history of tape recording people's discussions and putting them on the radio without their permission will not be allowed.
I'm going to interrupt this to point out a couple things. That's Ed Porter and I having a dialogue, and the warbling, again, is the attempted amplification of the voices and removal of the hum. My apologies for the strange effect it creates. Porter is reading from Fitzmaurice's Rules of Decorum in City Offices, and those are rules of decorum which Fitzmaurice created after the failure of his coffee klatch injunction 2 years ago. At that time, Mayor Fitzmaurice issued a coffee klatch injunction against us, claiming we were harassing Anna Brooks. Actually, it was Anna Brooks who went to court with the assistance of city staff to claim that we were harassing her. For 6 months, we fought that in court, three of us. We had been, in essence, lobbying people in the city council offices peacefully during business hours, non-disruptively, occasionally a little boisterously, but not to an extent in such a way as to stop business from going on. And we were never arrested for that, but instead they got a civil injunction against us, which held for 6 months until we took it to trial, and then it dissolved because we had tape recorded everything. Hence, now, they have rules about not tape recording, which, by the way, are unconstitutional. I believe if taken to court, they would go nowhere. If you want to tape record your interactions with a member of the city staff in a public in transaction, and they don't want that to happen, it's tough shit. You're there, they're a public employee, that's how it goes. If they're feeling shy about that sort of thing, they can go get psychological counseling, like hopefully Anna Brooks did, though I don't know if it's actually worked much. In any case, what Porter was reading from, and he is not rules about how public meetings are governed, he is reading from rules about conduct of citizens in the public office as decided by Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, as I used to call him, or Mayor Fitzmaurice, as he then called himself, or Councilmember Fitzmaurice, as he's now known. So what he's reading from is in no way any kind of law or any kind of agreed-upon policy. It was never even voted on by the City Council. It was simply promulgated, as far as I know. In any case, one of those Fitzmaurice principles states that you cannot hold meetings in City Council offices. So our entire meeting was also illegal. under the the very code that Fitzmaurice was reading. So he was completely wrong, and you'll hear more of the discussion. It's a little arcane. It's about the discussion concerns whether it was Brown Act viable. And what the Brown Act is the Public's Records Act. The Public Meetings Act, which requires some kinds of public meetings to get notices so that the public knows they're happening and has a right to be present and has a right to speak. I was claiming that this was a Brown Act meeting to some extent, but actually what I later decided was that it was not really a Brown Act meeting, meaning a meeting that was that had to be noticed 72 hours in advance. So they did. They posted a notice in advance. It's rather a public meeting from which you cannot exclude the media or members of the public without closing the meeting in some way. And that is something that Porter never did. He simply sort of insisted on his prerogative here. And you'll hear a lot of discussion about the Brown Act, but it's not really the Brown Act that is the question here. Although I think it is, I still think it's probably a Brown Act required meeting, because this is an important subcommittee meeting established by both the City Council and the Downtown Commission, and which was essentially putting together resolutions which would be acted on by City Council and by the Downtown Commission. So, and I think they realized that it was a public meeting and probably realized that the public had a significant stake because they announced it to the public. So all of this attempt to shut it down and exclude reporters was hogwash.
Just public, sir. I have a right to be in this meeting, and this meeting the public has a right to know what goes on in this meeting as well. That's fine. I think you're in error. This issue came up, as I said, in February of 2000 when Keith Sugar tried to do the same thing. Bob Aronson, who was attorney for the CPRB and still is.
If you take a look at the agenda, you'll see that this is not a public meeting. You're at the first seat.
It doesn't matter if you call it a public meeting or not. We're two subcommittees of the City Council, and one of their commissions meets. That is Brown Act, according to Bob Aronson's decision. And Keith Sugar followed that, and John Barrasoni acknowledged that in February of 2000. So I'm not trying to, do anything that hasn't been done before.
I talked to a number of...
This is Martin Bernal, Assistant City Manager.
This is basically, the council didn't appoint this committee before, whereas in the CPRP, the council appointed the representatives from the entire committee. In this case, the Downtown Commission created a subcommittee, the council, that they needed a couple of councils to work on this issue, but it wasn't created, and they weren't created as committees. And these two sets of representatives are meeting together.
And the point that Martin Bernal is making here is that the City Council, as a sitting body, did not specifically appoint this committee. I don't believe it appointed the CPRB City Council subcommittee that sat on the question of the Citizens Police Review Board either. I believe they appointed members to that committee. So I think that Martin Bernal is incorrect, and so is if he got that information from John Barrasoni. Barrasoni is also wrong. But his claim is that if this is pretty arcane, the question is why even get into it when the issue is simply we're not talking about personnel matters or litigation matters or that sort of thing. It's simply one council member's ego. He doesn't want one particular reporter to be recording what is going on, and he's going to insist on stopping the meeting as he does for the next 15 minutes to make that point clear. Again, the specific issue here is the fact that if the City Council appoints a subcommittee and the Downtown Commission appoints a subcommittee, both of those are Brown Act bodies, and that is to say they are required to have open meetings, they are required to have meetings of public comment, they are required to have meetings of 72-hour notice to their agendas. The public has some protections at those meetings that are very specific. That a subcommittee, a joint subcommittee of those meetings also is a Brown Act viable committee, and that was I made that decision. And even if I'd been wrong, and even if I am wrong about that, a meeting announced as a public meeting to which the public is allowed, which concerns matters of public interest by public officials, and those appointed by public officials should not be closed to the public and not be closed to the media. This happened, by the way, at a time of day when working people could not attend. It was like 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. There was no other media present, just me, so I was trying to make a record of it. I even offered, and you'll hear me offering this later in the tape, to let Ed Porter keep the tape, provided he would make it available to anybody who wants it, and put it in the library if you want. He wouldn't accept that either. It was at that point that one member of the Downtown Commission who had been in the room later turned to me and said, you know, Ed went over the top on that one. So even people who don't particularly like me personally or even agree with my position on different issues felt that what was going on was an abuse of power, and certainly a wrong decision.
And as such, as explained, it's not subject to the Brown Act. They didn't have to post an agenda, they didn't have to create an agenda, but they have the courtesy to do that. In fact, this language is not here, but provided by the
board. My understanding is that the CPRB is appointed by the City Council, just as the Downtown Commission is appointed by the City Council. They both sent subcommittees to meet. That's Brown Act viable, as I understand.
In the other case, the City Council created the subcommittee made up of CPRB members and council members. I think that was the distinction. Whereas here, the council did not create the subcommittee.
Well, I guess we can leave it to the courts to figure out. I mean, it's true. It's a little more indirect, but I think the public has a right to know.
I think the best thing would be just to review. I think people's minds being recorded, if we could just record writing, and then we can decide it later rather than.
I don't want to make it respectful, but I think that, you know, anything that's said here should be public record, and that, you know, could be played as an entirety. I don't see a problem here. And I appreciate what you're trying to say, but I think it's the right of public input that's on here. And also, similarly, if a member of the City Council wants to repress this by arresting a reporter in the middle of this, that's fine. That's a decision of the City Council.
Well, my finding is disruptive. I asked you not to record. You're recording anyway. You do as you please in most cases, so you don't have to leave.
I understand. I'm not trying to be disruptive. I'm happy to sit here. I believe it's within my rights and duties. I'm happy to have the meeting proceed.
I'm sure you would. If I asked you to stop recording, I'd be free to do so. That's good.
I'm welcome as it is, but I believe the public has a right to know what's going on.
Well, there's a lot of people here who are writing things down. Wrong past the point of being cooperative and not disruptive.
I'm not disruptive this week. You're the one who's stuck. And I haven't seen anybody else in there.
Well, I personally don't mind if you would take the point. I do, however, feel that Ed is chairing the meeting. And if Ed wants no table recording, then I would take Ed and ask me to turn off my table recorder. I can do that. Because he's chairing this informal meeting, and I would give him respect. I would turn it off.
See, it's not a matter of disrespect for Ed.
And what Emily Riley, who spoke up when I said I don't think anybody else objects, Emily Riley said, I don't object to your tape recording, but I feel Ed is the chair of the meeting, and as such, he has a right to, run the meeting as he wants, and out of respect for Ed, you should turn off your tape recorder. I would. I don't eliminate the Bill of Rights out of respect for anybody. I just don't think it's a healthy thing to do, particularly when you're dealing with city officials on controversial issues being given these kind of very important but very limited access committee meetings that are happening. I don't think it's a good idea, and that was the reason that I couldn't agree with Emily on that issue.
It's a matter, I think, of my responsibility to the community on this kind of an issue. This is a very important issue. It's been debated a lot. This whole committee process has been delayed for several months, and I think that it's important to have an accurate record of what's done. I don't see that the harm's in the tape. If you'd like, I'd be happy to leave this tape in a neutral hands if you're afraid it's going to be misused, so that the entire tape can be available to the public. That's all. I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. My request that you leave is what this tape.
Understand?
Because
I feel I have the right to be here as a member of the public.
And here, in case you can't hear it, because it is really hard to hear, this is an amplified recording for those who've tuned in of the November 4th subcommittee meeting where I was subsequently arrested for not leaving the room and not turning off my tape recorder. What Ed proposes is that I just leave the room. That's what he wants me to do. He wants me to either leave the room or turn off my tape recorder, and I refuse to do either.
You know, I wouldn't otherwise. I'd like to see the meeting proceed.
Well, it's not proceeding. You're drawing an agenda on your tape.
I'm not drawing an agenda. I'm just trying to record what's said. And I think that's a fair situation.
I know that's a difference.
Sure, you know how to write that. Yeah, I apologize. I need 2 minutes. I don't
know if this is appropriate.
I'm sorry, but it's going to stop. The meeting is going to stop.
And here I'm apologizing to the members of the meeting that this is being stopped, though I think Ed's the one who needs to do the apologizing. I didn't stop the meeting, he did. And I think the police are either about to arrive or did arrive, and they were then inquiring, you know, what's going on, and they asked me to leave, and I said, not unless Ed Porter is making a citizen's arrest or you're making an arrest, and they said they didn't want to make an arrest. Because they didn't feel they had enough evidence to make an arrest, and Porter delayed a bit and finally agreed to make an arrest. We have an incoming call here. Let's see what we got. Hi, you're on free radio.
Robert, I have a little trouble hearing you, but I got one. Okay, let's see if I get this right. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
The city council meetings are broadcast live like the sporting events.
Correct.
Community television goes down to all these community meetings like this, and they record their stuff and they put it on TV later.
Correct.
So why did they kick your ass after the same thing?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to be very, very clear about this. This was not an official, full city council meeting with a quorum. This was a meeting of a group called the Downtown Issues Working Group, which consisted of 3 city council members, 2 are in the room, and 3 members of a downtown commission, which is appointed by the city council. So the claim that Ed Porter was making, and that Martine Bernal agreed to, he's the assistant city manager, was that this is not a Brown Act protected meeting.
Well, my point is they show some of that other stuff on the cable television channel as well,
right,
besides the city council meeting.
Right. Well, they would tell you, they would say that those meetings are protected by the Brown Act, that they have to allow the public to attend. They have to allow the media to be there. They have to give them 72 hours notice. They have to post an agenda. They can't talk about an item unless they provide for a public comment period. But, they would say, this is a special meeting in which they don't have, it's not part of the Brown Act. It's not, the Brown Act does not apply to it. But you see, they're taking it a step further. They're saying that not only does the Brown Act not apply, they're saying that it is not even a public meeting, which I don't think is true. It was a public meeting.
Well, you know, it's even weirder than that. You ever heard of Melanie Morgan up in San Francisco, works for ABC?
Tell me.
Okay, she went to an Air Resources Board meeting up in Sacramento. They kicked her ass out for having recorders. And that was a public meeting. They kicked her ass out.
Right. I mean, you know, of course, there will be officials who will violate the law and violate the Constitution because they don't want either the public to know what's going on in those meetings or else they have some sort of exalted sense of their own power.
And then she turned around and filed a complaint and got threats on her telephone answering machine a couple of days later from some goddamn politician.
And that has happened to people who filed complaints. I have not gotten threats, probably because people regard me as so intractable that you either got to shoot me or ignore me, one of the two. I
heard a good one the other day on the AM station. There were some guys, militia types, they were talking about this federal plant authority being involved with the county and how they have the authority to control vegetable gardens,
yeah,
with federal,
right,
bureaucracy.
Uh-huh.
And I just kind of laughed. I said, there goes Proposition 215 and all your medical marijuana right down the toilet. Even if we have a Congress full of hippies, they can't legalize if they start messing around with UN treaties.
Huh.
That's what these guys were talking about. There's this federal bureaucracy. It has to do with that Rio Treaty a few years ago.
Well, I know that...
And these federal bureaucrats, they can literally tell the county what we could put in our vegetable gardens.
Well, just the way the federal government tells the local board that you have to have cell phone towers right nearby because they preempted everything with the 96 Telecommunications Act.
Well, I know. We haven't told that out in Capitolum, but then what's funny is a lot of these local officials, they want to turn around and use those damn cell phones, and there isn't a cop in this town don't have one. That's their secret business channel, 800 megahertz.
So they go
and hide now.
We'll have to make you our intelligence agent here for Bathrop Spears Broadsides caller.
But that is sort of kind of weird, you know, this federal plant authority bureaucracy coming in here and telling the county what we could put in our vegetable gardens, which means you could forget Proposition 215 even if Congress was nothing but a cesspool full of hippies, because they couldn't legalize it because of all the international treaties. And that's just kind of circumventing it, too, so there's a good one to think about.
Well, let me get back to the cesspool at City Hall. And I've got a question for you, caller. Can you actually hear any of this stuff out there?
Yeah, I can hear you on the radio, sure.
I mean, can you hear this particular tape, which is all warbling around?
Yeah, it sounds kind of funny, but I can definitely understand it.
Okay, well,
I've done a little work like that myself with some audio equipment. It can be a pain, but, hey, sometimes it does work.
Well, I want to thank the person who did this, and he knows who he is.
Oh, well, I can definitely hear it.
Hey.
I got to kind of wonder about those idiots down there, Wilson and that bunch, and city manager, eat guys.
I think if more people wondered, then maybe more people would do something about them. The guy's been out this crew.
Well, if all we get is just more of the same kind of jerks when we throw them out.
That may be, but, you know, the new jerks might be
better. Yeah, where do we get most of them? SCAN, don't we? That's where most of them come from.
You mean Santa Cruz Action Network?
Yeah, that and UCSC. That's where we get most of our politicians around here.
I don't know where Wilson and Belcher and all the heads of these departments came from. But, I mean, I know that SCAN was responsible for electing...
Suppose I told you that the handgun that the Sheriff's Department carries is on the Attorney General's list of Saturday night specials.
Really?
That's right. They're paying, like, hundreds of dollars for these Glocks. It's listed as junk. It's made out of plastic and it's classified as junk. You can't buy one because it's junk. But they can put a piece of crap in your face and throw it up against the wall, and if they got a hair trigger, you're dead.
Well, it's all for law and order, and we are on yellow alert. Let's keep that in mind, okay?
Well, my whole attitude is, hey, nobody needs a Saturday night special. If you're a cop, why don't you buy a good American-made steel handgun that says there's plastic crap with a hair trigger on it? They've already accidentally shot a couple of people as it is.
Just a minute. Caller, are you casting aspersions against our law enforcement officers?
I'm basically calling them hypocrites is what I'm saying. They should not be carrying firearms that are classified as Saturday night specials to the state of California and putting them in my face. That's what I'm telling you.
I see. Well, I appreciate the details, and thanks for calling.
And they're rotten, aren't they, boy? I heard about that guy in San Lorenzo Valley. Yikes.
I will say no more.
Read the email you got on him. Oh, my God.
Check it out. Thank
Later
you.
On, dude.
All righty. And you can email in here at rnorris@hotmail.com if I ever bother to check, which I will do at the next musical break. Let's hear a little bit more of Ed Porter and Arrest's Yours Truly on the November 4th Downtown Issues Working Group meeting with, unfortunately, no protest from anybody in the room. That kind of disappointed me. I would have thought that we had some vestiges of the First Amendment around. Oh, we got another call here first. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, I was just wondering what that caller, last caller, was he saying that the cops put a .38 special in his face?
He was saying that the police are using a form of gun that is considered a Saturday night special and is essentially a piece of crap, the sheriff's office. I don't know much about weapons, and so I can't really say one way or the other.
He wasn't saying that they put it in his face?
I don't think he was saying that specifically. He was saying that it's likely to go off if they do put it in your face. It's got a hair trigger, something to that effect.
Oh, how scary. Thank you.
Sure.
Bye.
That's my understanding of what was said. So let us once more get back to Wonderland. We have Ed Porter in Wonderland, or is it Robert Norris in Wonderland? In any case, everybody's in Wonderland here in Santa Cruz. Oh, actually, I have a guest in the studio with me who's just shown up. He doesn't have his own mic because we haven't set it up. I'll have to let him have a word here. Shall I introduce you by name, sir? We have Yon Golder here. Yon is another man who's gotten an injunction against him, or sort of an injunction. I guess it's a sort of a deal. It's not quite an injunction. It's some kind of... It is an injunction, yeah. Yon, as you know, has been on the air. He was arrested at City Council and held for 37 days for... at City Hall, not at City Council. Actually, in the same building where I was arrested. For apparently paranoia members, and he had a little hatchet in his belt. And apparently you bring that little hatchet into City Hall, because even the presence of a hatchet makes these guilty creatures so concerned that you might chop them into little pieces that they don't know what to do. Anyway, Jan, we're not going to talk about that yet. We're going to talk about what you have a comment about this.
Well, Robert's bringing up the whole issue of trying to get information from City Hall and from our city administration out into the public. And that's exactly what I started out to do, and it's essentially turned into about a going on 8 months nightmare of confrontation with the city legally, and with many, many different aspects of the city showing how it abuses it, the constitutional process, and tries to hide what they're doing. And I think he's sneaky about what he's doing, though he's been accused of that, and I don't think that he's abusive of the public process. Every time I've observed him in a meeting, he has really made an effort to be clear about what he's trying to do, and be clear that he's trying to follow the Constitution and the law as he interprets it, which is a responsibility of every citizen.
And I did not pay Young to make that statement, although we may get a little something later. We'll talk about that. Again, we're continuing with Ed Porter and me, November 4th. Stay with us.
According to our policy, taking recording conversation without permission is considered to be inappropriate behavior. I've asked them to leave. And I pointed out to the council member that this is, in my view, a Brown Act compliant meeting where tape recording is allowed and the public has the right to access. We have a disagreement with that. So our city attorney has told us this is a good person. So are you prepared to throw out a citizen's arrest against me? Is that what I'm asking you to leave? And I'm telling you I believe I have a right to be here. Okay. So is this an arrest on your part or on his part?
The only way I can arrest him is if he's
a police officer.
I'll wait for that. I'll be happy. All right. How are you? Yeah. This complaint's being signed. I'm not happy to be quite a right to be here.
The situation is Mr. Norris is here from the subject. He's refusing to comply with the policies and procedures. He wants to have things his own way, as he always does. And we're asking to leave.
So, Mr. Norris, will you leave alone and leave on your own on his request? I believe this is a public meeting. I believe I've acted properly. Mr. Porter interrupted the meeting to ask me to turn off the tape recorder. I said, no, the public has a right to hear this. He then stopped and called the police. I believe that a public should have access. I'm a reporter, and with the public, I believe it's not lawful to arrest me. That's my opinion.
Okay. So he's asking you to leave. He doesn't want you to arrest him. He doesn't want to do anything. Are you willing to leave?
I would prefer to stay, but in fact, it's my right to stay.
And if you stay, are you continuing your recording?
I will continue my recording, I believe. I think that's my right. It's my
right. So right now, he's asked you to leave several times. And you're obviously not going to leave.
I hear him. I believe he's mistaken.
Okay. So if he wants a citizen complaint against you, basically I'd place you in arrest. You know, wherever that pans out or how it pans out, we won't know. You know, I'm assuming you have proper ID and everything. So then I'd lock you up, issue you a citation for repeatedly trespassing, basically. You would be the arrested person. I'd be the one facilitating the arrest. And then everybody would go on their merry way. You wouldn't be allowed to come back.
I understand. Okay. Let me ask a question. Are you going to be allowed to report later in the meeting, or is this...
No.
No, you're not allowed. No, it's a recorded meeting. I see. So,
and if you have issues with that regarding your policy, then this is not the same place to bring up.
I understand.
He's just following what was written on him.
You know, he's the only one who wanted this done. He made his own personal decision. It's not a policy. It's not a choice.
Or even the mayor's So yeah, I think right now it's obviously a difference between both of you.
That's correct.
And, he's going off with what's written in the newspaper. He's saying this is unfortunately not a public meeting.
No, he is saying that he does not want it personally recorded. Okay. Therefore, he's decided.
So then, the best, and I you know, obviously you can deal with the situation differently. The best way that I would suggest is you take it up with his boss.
I understand. See, but in my view, unless he is required to make a suit.
And again, for anyone who's just tuned in, the station is not under alien attack. That is, in fact, simply the attempt to amplify a bad tape. It was very low, and so it's hard to hear, and the hum was removed, and that's where all that kind of psychedelic effects. Actually, it is audio LSD. You should be feeling the effects pretty soon, so stay near your home and have a loved one nearby to fondle. Just kidding about that. In fact, the other voice you're hearing is that of a police officer who is trying to figure out what to do about the situation. He's actually making some interesting, relatively naive but straightforward statements, saying in essence, this is not a public meeting. But I guess it's not that he understands that that in essence it's a complaint from Ed Porter, who's the council member in the chair, who's involved in this whole process. And Ed eventually signs the ticket, though he's really trying to get me out of there without signing anything, because he doesn't want to be legal. He doesn't want to have to go through that whole process, and I'm in insisting on it, and we're insisting that he continue with the meeting rather than I suppose back down and lose face. Since I can't think of any other reason why he would continue this process, he continues to insist, and we will hear more of that.
Citizen's arrest, I really will have no recourse. So if he wants to have me arrested as cited by signing a citizen's complaint, we can do that, and we can go to court on it. If he wants to do that right now, that's fine.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So,
unless he does that, you won't leave.
Unless he does that, I will exercise my prerogative to be a here as a member of the public, recording for other members of the public.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. You've been interrupted our meeting. We're trying to keep it in an outrageous situation.
Well, he's, can I just kind of check something?
Right.
Now we have Thomas Mantle speaking up. He's a conservative member of the Downtown Commission who... I don't know if he would care whether I was dragged off to jail and held for 2 weeks. He doesn't seem to be too concerned about this. His concern, of course, is going on with the meeting. His time is being wasted with this. So instead of telling Ed Porter to skip it, he tells the policeman to quickly arrest me so they can get on with their meeting. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that I don't like to, necessarily push these big analogies, but, the business of blaming the victim just to get and kind of pandering to people in power is something that is just so widespread and so typical in Santa Cruz in local politics that it leads me to a kind of despair of any kind of meaningful alternatives coming up. We look for rent control, we look for civil rights restoration, we look for an end to our own military, endless money to the police, cutbacks in the social services situation, endless money and privileges to businesses, and much less public process. When we want to change all these priorities, unless people start standing up for these issues, even at the risk of incurring displeasure from public officials, we're not going to get there. Anyway, enough of the soapboxing. Here's the rest of this tape.
So we might want to get together on the 20th.
Well, we have a slight problem here. For some reason, the play went back to the beginning, and it's going to be hard to find out exactly where we were. But I'm going to summarize the rest of the tape. I tell the group, and I tell the council member, and I tell the police officer, as soon as the citizen's arrest form is filled out, I'll leave. And in the meantime, carry on with your meeting. He refuses, of course, to carry on with his meeting. And he signs the citizen's arrest. I walk outside. And then there's a bit of the tape which has me in discussion with the police officers outside. They are having trouble finding a charge. They kind of look through the book. They can't figure out trespass. Well, I was invited in there, and it's a public, meeting. How can you trespass there? They can't cite me for violating the code. Porter quotes, because the code is not the law. The Fitzmaurice's ideas of what constitutes decorum are not law in this town, thank God, yet, though they're the basis for intimidation in the public buildings he and the council control. So he finally comes up with disrupting a public meeting. So I am accused of disrupting a public meeting by silently sitting there with a tape recorder. Of course, this is a preposterous charge, and Porter deserves to be financially liable for it. Particularly, the main reason I'm concerned that Porter be liable here, or a primary reason, is his ability to engage in these kinds of practices gives heart to others, other officials, who prefer to have their actions happen behind closed doors, or who, if they get vindictive towards a member of the public they don't like, whether for bad, good or evil, they have the power suddenly to engage in outrageous kinds of behavior. Excluding the public from meetings that they're not disrupting is outrageous behavior. Excluding a reporter is even more outrageous. And, of course, the Sentinel said nothing about this. The Metro had no words about this. Couldn't get Sarah Phelan to put this in her column or anybody else to discuss it. And the only time it's going to hit the press is if Ed Porter's grabbed and subpoenaed to court, which he will be. Whether it will be in federal court or municipal court, I don't know. Those are probably too expensive to go to. But small claims court is always an option. That's only $15. And you can get up to, what is it, $5,000 or $7,500 in damages, and we'll see how Ed answers the charges there. And it's nothing really personal with him. It's just that, how can a city council member do this? He's never apologized for it. He's never indicated this isn't going to happen again with other members of the public. So I think it's important that we take some action on this issue, at least that I think that I think it's important the community take action, and I felt it was important that I take action. If you want to see more about this, read more about it, you can go to the Indie Media website. That's www.santacruz.indiemedia.org, and go back to November 4th, look up Porter Busts Norris, or some such thing, and you'll find a story about it. There's actually a much more recent comment that I wrote. We have a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Robert?
Yes.
Can barely hear you.
Yeah, I'm having trouble hearing you, too. Speak up.
Ed Porter clearly dislikes you.
Oh, well.
And it goes back to when you tried to record him when he was running for city council. Didn't he try to take a tape recorder from you?
He was at a party at I think it was Catherine Byers' house on it was Emily Riley's no I think it was at his well it was either Riley or Byers or it was one of those council members. I think it was Byers, actually. I think it was back in 1998, and he was I recorded Byers' statements, and there was some question about it was Riley's. I think Riley was accused by some of not paying her workers a living wage. I don't think she does pay her workers a living wage. I don't have the documentation on that one way or the other, but Steve Argue claimed that was the case. And I wanted to record what was going on, and Ed Porter went into a major lather about that kind of thing. He felt it was outrageous that I was at a campaign kickoff doing interviews with people and recording their statements, politicians running for office, yeah.
Why do you figure that you're persona non grata with Mr. Porter?
Well, that's one of the reasons. He doesn't like, he feels that I'm insufficiently deferential either to council prerogatives or to the, I guess what he considers to be, maybe I'm just not nice enough. I don't know. I mean, I know he claims that I have played his statements on the air without his permission when he was running for office. But you don't ask politicians for their permission if you're making a recording in a public place where there's no expectation of privacy.
Yeah, I heard that when you first started getting into this disrupting a public meeting, brouhaha.
Yeah, I mean,
which, by the way, the recording is as surreal as the fact that you were charged with disrupting a public meeting.
Well, I figured, you know, we had to do something to the occasion, you know.
But there is something to be said. At least I'll say it, and to express this and put it out there, that clearly you are a persona non grata in many circles, and that those that associate with you by osmosis or whatever are also considered to be persona non grata.
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends on the circle. Certainly, in some circles, I mean, Marty does not invite me to her house. Marty Wormhout, the supervisor, no question about it. On the other hand, I don't want to be invited to her house.
Well, let's make a list. Marty Wormhout, Scan, the sitting city council.
Right. The existing politicians don't like the fact that I call them on their shit. That's the problem.
The existing city management.
Well, city management. I mean, I wouldn't say. I mean, actually, I have some friends in the city management. I think we chat and spend time together. So I don't know if I would say.
So there are exceptions then.
What's that?
There are exceptions.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, more than that. I mean, I think it's those who are in positions of power who've been criticized who get upset, or those who suddenly feel allegiance to those in power.
Now, why do you think this is?
Well, I think that's true in any case where you have the city officials being strongly challenged and regularly challenged. Those who are their friends and allies don't like to see that happening, and those who work for them maybe have developed a kind of Stockholm mentality, you know, Stockholm syndrome stuff. Although the opposite can be true, too.
What's that, Stockholm mentality?
Well, you know, when you're held in a closet by a terrorist, and this is some Stockholm thing, then you start adopting the values of your terrorist. You start suddenly feeling allegiance to that. I mean,
like Patty Hearst?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty natural. I mean, people who are part of the city bureaucracy are maybe nervous about being associated with me because their jobs are dependent upon, to some extent, they don't want to antagonize the people they work for, you know, and that can happen. On the other hand, it may be that I have bad breath. That could be one of the problems too.
Well, clearly these folks are offended by your presence for whatever reason or for a variety of reasons, and they do not seem to want to engage you in the process.
Right.
I do think that Mr. Porter clearly reacted wrongly. And I agree with you that it sounds to me to fit the very definition of the Brown Act. But, and there are a few exceptions, and they tend to revolve around litigation and personnel matters.
Right.
And if you're going to have a meeting like that, why not have it open to the public? And what are they afraid of? Are they afraid of having the tape on your free radio show? It gets kind of kooky. In a sense, like I said, the charges are as surreal as that tape of yours is.
Right. By the way, a quick announcement. Today is Liberation Day. Rally and march against intolerance. Stop all cannabis arrests. Stop the lies. Release the medicine. Heal the sick. End the prison state. It's the Million Marijuana March, and I believe that they are at the town clock, even as we speak, although I haven't heard from them. I got this a couple of days ago in an interview. So I'm sorry to...
Oh, no, interesting. You bet. Those are my comments. I respect all these folks to a certain degree. I think it's a very difficult job. They do a lot of work for very, very little pay, for what is essentially token pay. I'm sure it's a significant honor, but at the same token, I think Mr. Porter is not showing his best side by being as abrased as he is by you. Clearly, I'll go so far as to say he hates you. Your presence he finds intolerable.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The last conversation I had with Ed Porter recently was, he has never returned my phone calls. I think I reached him once on the phone just because he happened to pick it up, but he doesn't return phone calls. For those who want to, by the way, call Ed Porter and comment on this to him, his phone number is 420-5024. And again, that's a number that he does not give out, even though it is a public number. It is a number of his office. And if you want to get him directly, you can leave a message on his line, or you can wait, go through the labyrinth of, the answering machine stuff.
Last thing, I want to say that I think that the city council, Porter and Riley in particular, were in a very difficult situation with the downtown ordinances. I do believe that something had to be done, and what it boiled down to was getting more specific about where you can stand and where you can't. I don't think any of them really wanted to go those steps, but I think that they felt that they had to. And in my opinion, Robert, if you were open and sincere enough to talk to some of the folks on the other side, some of the shopkeepers, some of the women that were harassed on Pacific Avenue, the complaints had risen to a level where they had to act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I have, and I've played their interviews on the air, and I think harassment is one thing. And
in fact, your name comes up quite frequently
I didn't do it, and I'm not responsible for any children either. I want to point that out right now.
As an impediment to the process, maybe being more politely taken care of. Okay.
Really?
So I mean, I don't know. I think it was difficult. I think they were in opposition, and I think that it was called upon for them to do something, and they did what they could do.
Right. Well, actually, remember, you're talking about a broader issue. We're talking just about this behavior by Porter at this meeting.
Clearly, the guy was not only overreacted, but was foolish. Okay.
Well, he was violating rights
of the
community, in my
view. But the thing is that what Porter probably knows is that it probably his reaction, his foolishness, won't go beyond, which is kind of shameful, really. It won't go beyond this free radio show that you're doing right now.
Actually, that's not true. It's going to go to court. A subpoena will bring him to court, and hopefully a photographer will catch him at court.
Well, I will stay informed in that regard. Like I said, I have a certain fondness for Porter and Riley and the other folks, Fitzmaurice and Rockin and the like.
We'll bring you in as a character witness.
And I also think that you are very defendable, Robert. You may be irascible and insouciant, but you're very defendable.
Well, thank you, Bob.
All right, you take care.
All right. Young, you had a comment about this.
Well, was Bob saying that you were an impediment to a more peaceful resolution of the process? Is that I kind of caught that from that statement, but I'm not.
You know, Bob has a different view on this than I do, we're kind of running up against the clock here. I want to give you a chance to talk about other issues. Downtown ordinances are a big issue. My views are pretty clear. Bob has some views too, which he's expressed. You have some recent information. You're a man who's. You're allowed to only make 5 requests a month from the city council office in terms of answering written questions, because apparently what you have to say is too hot to handle. What's with that, Young?
Yeah, well, Robert, I haven't been at this as long as you have, but I've kind of tackled it head on in more ways than one.
37 days in jail.
Yeah.
I didn't do that one.
So what I have been doing, I started back in July and August to request information from the city council, or from the city, on the Greenbelt and management of the Greenbelt, because I felt the taxpayers were not getting what they expected. And I worked very hard to get, I was trying to do a report before the election, November election.
And then your car was seized, and you needed to get information about that.
Well, right. I kind of got stonewalled by Parks and Recreation Department. They just didn't want to respond to the questions. And that's what I found the city, if you're getting close to the meat of the matter and the city is getting uncomfortable, they just don't respond. But we have an act called the California Public Records Act that actually allows you to get in the door and requires public officials to disclose information if it's not on the non-disclosable list of items under that government act. So, yes, and then in the middle of that, the city wound up unlawfully, in my opinion, towing my car, booting my car and towing my car, and so my attention was focused on that. And then, boy, talk about resistance to giving out information. I would say, subverted the legal process, due process, every single part of it for trying to resolve that issue. And so that just kind of made me that much more resolute, and what the end result of that, or a result of that, was City Manager Dick Wilson wrote a letter that denied me face-to-face meeting with any city staff, and I told him essentially I was...
Now, had you been abusive, had you used swear words or threatened any of the city staff?
Not at all, to my knowledge. And as a matter of fact, I may have been a little bit intimidating because I was getting frustrated again and again by people who simply wouldn't respond or refused to give me information.
Why would you say you've been intimidating? What way? Would
well, I just have a strong personality, Robert. And when I look somebody in the face and I, you know, kind of grimly say, "Well, I would like this information," and tell me why I can't have it. This is intimidating, especially to secretaries. Apparently,
you were talking about you were in a situation. I'm not going to go over the details now because we don't have time, but your vehicle was taken without the adequate, they didn't show you the tickets that they're required to show you under state law. You discussed this in some detail at other times. The examining officer didn't have the credentials. It wouldn't show the credentials that, in fact, you found a variety of state codes that you suggested people use, and apparently these kind of questioned the process that was being used and the specifics that were done to you in the seizure of your vehicle. And you went into the office with a hatchet because you were not planning to do a hatchet job on the city council, but you didn't want to be taken while he was outside, is what you told me. And then you were arrested outside, and you were charged with resisting arrest. All those charges were dropped, but the one where you were, I guess, damaged to a police vehicle because you couldn't, they tried to shut you up, close the window, and they were going to take your dog, and you wanted to attract somebody's notice, so you pounded on the door. But you served 37 days in jail, and then you were given a restraining order for essentially that stopped you from coming back to city council or any city offices, approaching any city personnel or most city personnel, except and with written information. You can't even phone city offices, right?
Yeah, well, what happened, there was actually two types of restraints, legal restraints. One was a restraining order, a temporary restraining order. It was a civil action, and there was a criminal protective order, which is a criminal action.
Pursuant to what crime were you given?
Well, the crimes that they were accusing of me, Robert, was resisting arrest and assault on an officer, or battery on an officer. Not assault, but a battery on an officer.
We should say you had a tape recorder with you at the time. You were recording. Good advice, by the way, is ignore Fitzmaurice's decorum rules if you go into the offices at city council and you're engaging in important business and you think you need a record of what's going on. Tape record it. Do it visibly.
And I've learned this lesson from Robert and Richard Quigley and several other people who told me, have a tape recorder with you at all times. And I think that's an excellent idea because you've got that tape recorder going. There's no question about what was said or not said for the most part. So it does, the police take a whole different attitude when you've got that tape recorder rolling. They can't twist around what you said. So, and as a matter of fact, you can review what you said. If you thought you said something or whatever, you can find out whether you did or not. So, I resisted arrest, and I was fully cooperating with the police in their detention of me, and they're worried about this hatchet, which I simply took along with me to keep from getting stolen. And when they tried to put physical force on me without telling me I was being arrested, I resisted. Of course, it turned into a big deal. And the city tried to highlight that whole event when they took me to court, and they dragged it on for several months. And in the meanwhile, I had the civil action delayed. And then
that's the civil action where they were trying to have you barred by a restraining order from all the offices. And it should be said that because they didn't take you to court on a criminal charge of resisting arrest seems to indicate that they didn't feel they could.
Well, they eventually really saw that once they got the bigger picture of it, they saw that they wouldn't be able to hold those charges. And I plea bargained, but the plea bargain that I did was to this vandalism of police car door, but I did it under a conditional, a number of different conditions, and one of them that they released my property, which included the hatchet and the tape recorder, both of which are valuable tools to me. And as it turns out, and this just goes to show, we're talking about obeying the law and trying to get things done under the law. The city refused to obey the judge's orders for more than 2 months. Here's what I had to do, actually. The DA objected to returning my property, but the plea bargain was conditional on them returning my property immediately. So right after this case was settled back in February 6th, I went to the police station with my copy of the judge's order saying, release this property. I handed it to the property clerk, says, may I have my property? I said, well, we can't release it on that. We've got to get the DA's order from the DA. So I went back to the DA and asked them to go through whatever process they wanted to go through. And I waited around for days, which turned into weeks, and they talked about releasing my property, and then it turned out to say, well, the DA is saying that it won't release your property. They're going to keep it for appeal. Well, there essentially is no appeal in a settled case, a plea bargain case, so that was just really a false lead. So I kept at it and kept at it, and...
Luckily, you had not been barred from going back to the DA's office yet. That's the next restraining order.
Well, that would be the next restraining order, yeah. So so I finally decided that since I narrowed down exactly who's responsible, the property clerk and the property clerk supervisor and the DA, Linda Zabari. So I decided to file a small claims court suit against them, claiming damages for every day I didn't have my property that the judge ordered returned. And I've already served part of that, and I'm in the process of serving the rest of it. All of a sudden, my property got released. They finally let go of it all. So, in other words,
the story of these mores is what?
Is that you've got to apply some legal pressure on these people and threaten them with dragging them into court, which is time and money to them, and that's really about the only thing they respond to, just like a belligerent corporation. You've got to wind up costing them out of their pocket before they're really going to respond. Promises and attempts to mediate don't work. And I learned that we were talking about Ed Porter, when my car was towed, I took about a week and a half going to the law library to make sure I knew exactly what I was talking about. I presented a letter, a five-page letter, describing everything that happened and all the laws that I felt that were on my side, and to the best of my knowledge, the details of what happened, gave it through a friend to Ed Porter to give to the city manager and try and get the car released. And what I really asked for in that letter was a conference to discuss all these things. Well, the city never responded that way. And the city manager, even though he had a meeting with Ed Porter, later claimed in court he knew nothing about it. Throughout this process,
Are you saying our city manager, Dick Wilson, the $160,000 a year bargain we've had since 1984, lied under oath to the court?
Well, let's put it this way. We have written statements now that I've managed to get through the California Public Records Act and through the ordering of the city to answer five of my questions per month under strict guidelines of the California Public Records Act. We've turned up information that I couldn't even get in a subpoena in my civil case. And it turns out that the city manager did have records on these incidents when Dick Wilson said they didn't.
Well, surely Dick just simply was negligent in some way. Perhaps the staff was hiding these records from him.
I think that a lot of people in the city exercise an ability called selective memory. It happens a lot, I think, when people are under oath when they don't want to reveal what's been going on.
Is that the twin cousin to selective enforcement?
Yeah, it's a mm-hmm. it's a very very handy ability. So I've been through quite a few different things with the city, and now they've. Well, just to give you an example, I want to emphasize this California Public Records Act, Government Code 6250, and if you haven't looked it up in the law library, it's a very powerful act, and it tells people what they can get from any government agency and what they can't get, and what there are some things that are conditional depending on circumstances. But one thing you can always get, practically, I've found, is a 911 call involving you, or actually pretty much involving anybody. It's called a request for public assistance. You can get every line of that recording and a transcript of it, and you get a lot of information on it.
You showed me a four-page, it's a dispatcher's report, and this is something I'd never been aware of in my many years of homeless activizing. And I really am. I'm grateful for this. I haven't really actually made a request for my own dispatch records, but no doubt I will soon. Indeed, we have a federal lawsuit coming up around the Butchie Baker arrest of January 2002, where he and Matisse Selman had me arrested for tabling in front of the Sushi Now New Leaf Market. And that case, again, all these things seem pretty damn petty when you look at them. You've got a war in Iraq that's killing thousands of civilians still. The war hasn't ended, folks. But, you know, what's all this worrying about 14 feet from a building and all this crap? Well, the answer is that there's a war on the poor in Santa Cruz.
Well, Robert, you know, I mean, you said petty, but, you know, I don't think it's petty because your Constitution gets stolen from you in your own backyard. It doesn't get stolen from you, you know, thousands of miles away. We can complain about what's going on overseas, but believe me, issues every bit as important are happening right here in Santa Cruz. Every day, every week, your city council is screwing with the Constitution. The police are screwing with the Constitution. And your rights, unless you step in there and learn about the law and actively resist, both in a legal sense and in a physical sense, actively resist these things, you're going to lose these rights. That's what happens. So the incident I was talking about here, I went into the city library, and this was after they had a order to keep me away from city offices, and I thought city county library. I figured, well, it's jointly run by the county, the city can't call all the shots here. I went in there to study, and I'm sitting down at a table, and apparently somebody recognized me and called me in, and there was four pages, and this is small print, four pages of radio dispatch checking out everything they could about me to find some way that they could legally haul me out of there. And I've got a hold of that now, and when you talk about Big Brother, you talk about how does the system operate behind your back, these 911 dispatches are an excellent way to do it. You find out everything that everybody said. You get all these numbers and all these records that the police are running, and you find out every single comment that they make over the air to each other, every single officer that was involved. And this gives you a very good tool to subpoena people. And some officers will say things you won't hear them on the 911 dispatch, but you've got the officer's name, and you can subpoena the officer and say, well, what were you talking about? You know, what were you discussing during that time? The California Public Records Act is a very important tool to move on to discovery in a trial. And discovery is the process, if you're not familiar with it, of finding out what the other side has. It didn't used to be. We actually had legally... rights of discovery in criminal matters, but that was changed quite a few years ago, and now you can do discovery in criminal matters. You can find out what evidence they used.
Give us the number of the California Public Records Act.
It's government code 6250, and then it goes on from there, 6251, et cetera. Very well worth looking up. You can look it up in the main public library. It's got the state codes. They're also online. I can't remember the website. But you read this and get a copy of it and go through it carefully, and you'll find it's an incredibly powerful tool. And anytime you make a request to city government, you should say, I'm making a request under the California Public Records Act, which requires them to respond within 10 days, telling you.
So actually, our city did not respond to your Public Records Act request for a longer period of time, right?
Well, they're rusty at responding.
You gotta kind of help them get the lead out.
They're under court order now, and so they're going to learn it. What you find out is that most of the secretaries and receptionists and people in the office don't even know anything about this act.
Now we're listening to Yon Golder, who is an outdoor, how would you call yourself, an outdoor seminar giver?
Well, I'm an outdoorsman, and I call myself a professional outdoorsman. I teach outdoor skills and give outdoor custom tours. And basically,
the guy with the big canoe on his truck, if you happen to be wandering through town.
Teach people how to enjoy and actually live in the outdoors and in the city and in metropolitan areas. Using the resources that God put out there.
And we're
for
trying
us.
To get him also to throw a couple of legal seminars. Sounds like this man has been through the mill a number of times, and it would be useful, I think, to have his information available for the public to listen to and to consider. I do have a problem, and we have about 20 minutes left in the show. We're going to be having the next show setting up. Apparently, there's going to be a somewhat large to-do in the next show. I'm not quite sure. Our next show is in the Red Light District with Ruby and Spoon. Country meets hip-hop in a dark alley. I'm not sure what would result from that union, but I guess some folks know because they've been listening to the show. So I'm going to ask you to kind of sum up for the moment Yon, and I'm going to invite you back again to another show. You've been very patiently showing up, sometimes late, but definitely here to the shows. And are you interested in coming back again, or?
Well, absolutely, because this process, this legal process or battle, confrontation, whatever you want to call it, litigation I have with the city is really, we've had a number of battles, but the war is going to be a long one. And anybody who's had problems feeling like either the city has stepped on them heavily or feel like their rights have been subjugated by either the legal process or the city process, we'd love to hear from you. I'll give you the best advice I can from my experience. I'm just a beginning beginner at the legal process, I guess. I don't pretend to be any kind of legal authority, but I've been consulting with some good attorneys, and I've been reading a great deal of law. And I used to work for the city, so I know a great deal about how their processes work and how to get information from them. But I think what I'd like to sum up here is that in my civil case, and it's just settled temporarily now, one of the things that Judge Attic, when he brought us into chambers to kind of come up with a temporary settlement, was that he asked the city attorney, he said, well, what's a reasonable number of questions to ask per month for a citizen? And John Barisoni's answer was two. Two questions a month. And, of course, their argument was, well, if every citizen asked a question, we'd just be swamped. Well, you know, I think everybody should be out there asking questions, certainly, but pertinent questions. And I think that forum should be very open. It's a shame that we don't have city council meetings that fill the civic auditorium every week, because they're discussing rights that are certainly important enough for most of you to attend. And so two questions a month.
We are going to be discussing that, and we're going to be discussing that next time you come in, but I gotta cut you off pretty quick here.
So five questions a month is what I'm limited to, but those are hard questions, and they're having to come up with answers.
And there could be other people who might present questions that he might present.
Yeah.
You never can tell. They're you know, when they say, I am Jon Golder. I am Jon Golder.
Get in touch with Robert.
100 Jon Golders show up here.
Get in touch with Robert and bring your really piercing, to-the-bone questions about city government, and we'll see if we can't actually get them answered.
Who knows? Jon may start his own show, too. I mean, we will try to get a show for you on the air.
Can we get this boosted about 50,000 watts, Robert?
If that other caller wants to set up a station, hey, we can do it 24 hours a day, or some of us can do it. I could babble on. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. You've been hearing Jon Golder. I'm going to make a couple of kind of brief announcements. Nick Whitehead, Nutcracker Nick, as I call him, is a playwright who you have heard on this radio station. He wrote Home Sweet Homeless, which you probably haven't heard unless you've been listening for a real long time. That was back in the early 90s. And also Homeless in Space. Nick is a Green Party activist. He is also the co-founder of SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, and a community TV worker for a long time with Club Cruise. I want to let people know Nick was bit by a rattlesnake several days ago in San Luis Obispo. And he was ambulanced off to the hospital, and now he's back up here. Still ain't feeling too good. So I'm, it may be difficult to deal with the rattlesnakes at city council, but who knows? Maybe the real thing down in San Luis Obispo is even worse in some respects, so at least a little more immediately life-threatening. Also, it seems that, for those who are interested, Miguel Balderos, Mad Mike the Wonder Dog, is under suspicion of arson at City Hall. Not based upon any specific evidence I've heard, but apparently detectives are inquiring among his friends and interrogating people around that issue. So that's something that's happening with Miguel Balderos. I haven't heard from him in terms of any specifics about any of this, and I wouldn't expect to necessarily, but I just want to kind of keep the community informed. There is an Oakland police protest coming, follow-up coming up on May 12th. More about that when this show returns on Thursday between 6 and 8. We do a second show on Thursday. I do. Excuse me. Between 6 and 8 in the evening. Also, we're hoping to get some more updates on a number of things. I had numerous articles I was going to read today, which I don't think we are going to have time for. I'm kind of looking them over as we... having some problems with our computer, of course. we got here? What I'm going to do now is play a few more of our classic dialogues on the street to kind of update you on numerous things. And we have another 15 minutes in the show. If you've got phone calls, feel free to call in, 427-3772, or off air if you want to leave a message, 423-HUFF. I did get the email from the caller on the assault weapons. I want to let that caller know, and it sort of was kind of a reprise of what he said on the air. And again, what that is, let's see, the details. State legislature banned Saturday Night Specials 5 years ago. Bill Lockyer drew up a shit list of firearms, which he calls pieces of junk. Maybe so, but corrupt law enforcement agencies continue spending our tax dollars on wholesale purchases of these products. Mark Tracy's goons carry the ugly black Glock semi-automatic pistols on the street. This is Sarah Brady's favorite piece of junk. Ha 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 ha. Meanwhile, one klutz discharged his Glock Saturday Night Special in the sheriff's office. Holes in the wall. Another deputy dog pulled over a teenage DUI suspect in Soquel. His piece of Glock junk accidentally went off and wounded the suspect, and this screw-up cost us a lot of money. The solution is easy. Nobody needs a piece of junk, including crooked police officials who say one thing, do just the opposite, and waste our money. The Glock issue is political cannon fodder for activists. Lawsuits have been filed over people getting shot with hollow point bullets, which are not considered to meet current standards of political correctness either. And that's an incoming email we got here. Now a little on the street stuff. Stay with us.
Okay, we're talking to Def Jam, who is a regular vigil here. But before he began his vigil, I believe, Jam, you got a chalking ticket. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is it taking $48 a week of that for child support? I don't know. How many times?